I want to speak to a gentleman who is actually rushing to get a train. He's very relevant to one of the stories, one of the main stories on the news this morning. This issue of whether or not we should spend £150 million on compensation for victims of the Troubles, or indeed should we fund the Historical Investigations Unit. Four former secretaries of state and other high-profile people want the money spent on the victims. It's Lord Hayne that I'm referring to. Lord Hayne, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
I suppose the most obvious question is, what does it cost to buy off the possibility of justice?
No, it's not about buying off justice. Justice isn't being achieved. If you look at the Historical Inquiries team that worked over a number of years and investigated 1,600 cases involving more than 2,000 deaths, just three of those 1,600 resulted in prosecutions and convictions for murder. Now, to repeat that exercise seems to us likely to produce the same limited outcome, which does not bring justice or closure or any sense of feeling of relief to victims who've suffered so much. And we're arguing that since the government has put £150 million on the table, that money should be directed at supporting victims in a way that the Victims Commissioner and others involved, including the victims' groups themselves, should decide, not a matter for us. But that money, that £150 million, instead of producing such a tiny result and being spent on lawyers, investigators, diverting police resources from fighting crime and terrorism into these historic cases, that money should be to support victims.
However, the Victims Commissioner, who you make reference to, Judith Thompson, today saying that this call is for all harm by all people to be shoved under the carpet and forgotten about.
No.
This is not what victims and survivors are asking for.
No. I'm not sure whether she had an opportunity to read our letter, which sets out the case that we're not asking for an amnesty. We're not saying, indeed, we're supporting the police and prosecutors if they discover it of a criminal or terrorist act from the Troubles, then they should be pursued. The law should take its course. Due process should occur. What we're saying is not the way the normal process of the law operates. But this is a choice for us now as to whether this $150 million that the government's put on the table is prioritised on investigators and lawyers and diverting police resources or supports victims. On past evidence, that the evidence of 1,600 cases producing only three prosecutions and convictions for murder, it is not likely, since these events are 40, 50 years ago in some instances, and certainly a long time ago. Witnesses have died. Forensic evidence is no longer available. We're not likely to get the process of justice actually delivering a result in a way that everybody would otherwise want. That's so, the case we're making.
Some people will say it's a veiled effort to ensure that British soldiers, for example, get off scot-free, the likes of those who would have been involved in Ballymurphy or Bloody Sunday.
Well, it is of importance that at the present time, and we've noted this in the letter, prosecutions are being considered for former, often long-retired members of the armed forces, dragged out of retirement and chased down. Perhaps because, you know, the army kept records on them and information on where they were and what they were doing, as did the police and the security services, whereas that's not the case for paramilitaries. There are no records on what they were up to, loyalist or Republican, that they find themselves, soldiers and others, in the front line of this prosecuting process. Now, that can't be right. It's essential to treat this process and this matter in an absolutely even-handed way. And so, for instance, we're arguing against a selective, quotes, amnesty for just members of the armed forces, as some retired generals and others, including unionists in Northern Ireland, have argued, that only members of the security forces who are serving their government in dangerous circumstances, that they should be exempt. And similarly, Republicans, including Sinn Féin, are saying only those members should be, only those individuals should be focused on, and paramilitaries should be ignored. Now, what has happened is victims get themselves caught in the middle of this political crossfire instead of being prioritized. You take the case, for example, and I'm not saying that they're signing up to our MESA, we didn't consult them on it. Take the case of the WAVE trauma victims. They are a very important group of around 500 people, innocent victims caught in the crossfire, some victims of mistaken identity, badly injured, severely disabled, unable to work during their lives in the way that those without injuries or disabilities normally are, unable to accrue a pension. I've made the case, as have they very persuasively, for them to get a pension. Now, instead of spending million, and I think that may only cost 5 million, by the way, instead of spending that money on lawyers, investigators, and police resources, why not provide that immediate support to those people who are so deserving? And there are many others.
But what about the others? Because the but Lord Hinn,
newspaper reporting suggests.
Yes, but the others are
the newspaper reporting this morning in Northern Ireland suggests it should be divvied up. We're not saying that. This is a matter for the Victims Commissioner, if the government chooses to follow our advice, if it does, and the political parties agree as part of the Stormont process, then that should support victims in whatever way is decided. We're not making that decision.
But when we talk about pensions, we have to consider this great debate about all victims. And the obvious question is, would you compensate the perpetrators or their families, the people who carried out the acts of violence? There's a call for those people to be compensated as well, to have the pensions, to have the slice of the 150 million. Have you factored the perpetrators into your budget?
We're not addressing that debate. That's not a matter for us. We are not frontline ministers as I was as Secretary of State, or politicians, or as Lord Eames was, who's also a signatory, the Primate of All Ireland.
Yeah, but it can't be ignored. It's such a central part of the debate.
No, but that's, of course it is, but whilst that debate is raging, and it's a genuine debate, and I understand it, and the political parties are divided on it, and so on, whilst that debate is raging as to the definition of a victim and so forth, actually, the weeks, the months, the years tick by, and in the case of the WAVE trauma victims, nobody's disputing that the great bulk, at least of those, maybe 490 out of the 500, had no part in the troubles other than to be caught in the crossfire or find themselves victims of mistaken identity. Now, let's make a start with them and then debate how we should, instead of, as it were, replaying the record and devoting huge resources, many years, to looking at cases that it is unlikely on past evidence, and we have the past evidence of the historic inquiries team, is unlikely to produce the outcome that everybody wants, which is justice. Try a different way. Draw a line, not an amnesty, not acquitting those responsible of crimes or terrorism or members of the security forces of acts that should not have been carried out, like Bloody Sunday, not acquitting them or wiping the slate clean or letting anybody off. If evidence comes to light, it should be followed in the normal way. But saying there's a choice, spend this 150 million on past investigations that are unlikely to produce an outcome, or support victims today.
Okay, Lord Hinn, thank you very much for your time this morning. Your opinions are very welcome on what Lord Hinn has been saying. We'll talk to Brian Rowan very shortly about this in just a moment. Good morning to you. Now, we had Lord Hinn right at the top of the programme because he had an important appointment to go off to at 9:10. I want to speak to Brian Rowan, who was listening there to Lord Hinn, former Secretary of State. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Brian, you have a headline, a piece of writing that says, "We can't bring back the dead." Can we take from that you have some understanding of where Lord Hinn is coming from on this?
Well, these are serious people who can't be ignored. Peter Hinn was Secretary of State here when the IRA ended its armed campaign, and when Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness went into government together in 2007. Lord Paton Chris Patton, who chaired the Commission on the Reform of Policing, which brought about the end of the RUC title. Lord Eames, Robin Eames, who was a co-chair with Dennis Bradley in another consultation on the past, which reported back in 2009, made very similar recommendations to those that emerged in the Stormont House Agreement around investigations, information retrieval, an archive for storytelling and the reconciliation element. So these are people who know this place, who can think their way through this place. While this intervention will be viewed as controversial, it most certainly cannot be dismissed.
It can't be dismissed because the person who has been tasked with looking out for victims, the victims commissioner, seems a lot less than pleased with what sounds, and I know you can, and Lord Hayne eloquently put it across, but you can dress it up in many ways, but it sounds like a buy-off.
Yeah, well, he's insisting, and I spoke to him yesterday, he's insisting that this is not an amnesty proposal. I heard him say that to you again, Frank, this morning. But others will view it differently. When you move to make arguments against historical investigations, others will see that only as an argument for amnesty and shutting down one of the elements, the proposed elements of the legacy process. I think what this does, Frank, it puts a further focus on the worth of historical investigations. What will they achieve? He refers back to the work of the historical inquiries team, that tiny number of convictions, three over 1,600 cases. And the argument that he outlined to you this morning is to repeat that exercise with the proposed new historical investigations unit would be both pointless and a waste of money. That could be better spent supporting victims. The proposed spend, Frank, is £150 million on a legacy structure covering a five-year period. That's not just for historical investigations. It's for the Independent Commission on Information Retrieval to fund the Oral History Archive and to fund a reconciliation element. So this intervention, this letter to the Secretary of State, argues for the prioritization of victims' compensation over investigations. Now, the problem 10 years ago when Eames Bradley reported was that the Northern Ireland office said there was no consensus in terms of the way forward on the past. 10 years on, Frank, and I mentioned this to you in an interview yesterday, we're no closer to achieving agreement on the best way forward on legacy. No agreement within politics, no agreement within policing, two very different submissions from the Police Federation and the Police Service last week. No agreement among the victims' community. So the government has to sit back again after this latest consultation. It closed last Friday. They told us that they would take 12 weeks to consider that consultation and then decide on next steps. But in all that you've heard in the last number of days and in what you've heard from Peter Hayne this morning, what the response from the Victims Commissioner, there is still no suggestion that we've got that consensus and that agreement on this most difficult and vexed issue.
But I suppose for people who are hoping for justice, while a line isn't being drawn under it, they live at least with the consolation that those who visited hurt upon their family or upon them, that person, whether they be sitting in a nursing home now or whether they be living the high life on the Costa del Sol, wherever that perpetrator is, there is still a sneaking hope that they might get a tap on the shoulder, that they will be looking over their shoulder, that they will lie in bed at night and be worried about what they did, and they may have to pay for it sometime. When the line is drawn under it, that person, that perpetrator, that doer of evil deeds can rest easy.
Well, you heard Peter Hayne insist that this is not a proposal for amnesty. The proposal leaves this with the police, Frank, And that's not good for policing, because policing is constantly being undermined in legacy arguments. And you have the argument on occasions that new policing looks very like old policing when these arguments emerge over legacy. I hear what you say, but we had a peace process that released prisoners. And we have a pass process that potentially could send people to jail, no matter how small that number. Now, I think there's a huge contradiction in all of that. I think also that sending a small number of people to jail is not addressing the past. In the waiting for some process on the past, living memory is being lost, critical living memory. So we will never hear Martin McGuinness's account of the conflict years, Gusty Spence or David Irvine's account of the conflict years. So we need to find a process, Frank, that delivers the maximum amount of information. And there is this continuing argument from some that investigation is the obstacle in the way of information retrieval and truth recovery. So what will happen out of this consensus, out of this consultation, I'm not sure. Will the Northern Ireland office proceed with the suggested structure of historical investigations, the Independent Commission on Information Retrieval, that archive element and reconciliation element? I just don't know. But we also know, Frank, that outside of the consultation, that other argument about a statute of limitations, what others would call an amnesty, hasn't gone away. It is still there, still part of this conversation. Some people think that it's intended only for soldiers and members of the armed forces who served here. But if you go back to the Defence Committee proposal, it came in a number of parts. It recommended a statute of limitations for the armed forces. It encouraged the government to extend that to cover RUC and other security personnel. And it also suggested that after consultation, the government should decide whether that statute of limitations, with a line set at 1998, should apply right across the board. So that would mean security force, Republicans, and loyalists would all be part of such a statute of limitations. So that argument is still there, still part of this conversation, still part of this consultation. And there are big decisions to be made, Frank, in the next number of weeks about how the government proceeds on all of this. I would make the point, Frank, that on this, they're going to get one chance to get it right. And if it does take a little more time to consider some of these proposals that are out there, controversial as they may be, including the proposals outlined to you this morning by Lord Hain, then I think that time should be taken to consider what is the best way forward and what will produce the best results. I used a sentence a couple of years back that it was time to stop lying about the truth. And what I mean by that, Frank, is it's time to be more honest about what can be achieved and what will not be achieved in a legacy process. We need to know on the table, we need to put on the table exactly what is possible and what is not possible if we go down the road and the route of a legacy process.
Brian, thank you very much indeed. The analysis from Brian Rowan. Good morning to you. This is the U105 phone-in. It's Frank Mitchell here to the middle of the day.